safety, they represented security, they represented prosperity. There was the belief that somehow through these gods and trust in these gods and relying upon these gods, one could have children and have a good harvest. And these were very, very important in many of these homes. And it was powerful enough in the life of Rachel that she felt it was important enough to steal those gods, those idols. I don't know everything that's going through her mind as they're packing things up and getting ready to go. But she's probably, as they get closer to that moment, shaken up. This is all she's ever known. This is the only place, the family, this situation was all she had ever known and all she had ever experienced, and now they're leaving. And so she may be thinking, as she's thinking about the security of those gods, will we be safe? Will we be secure? Will I be taken care of? How am I going to live without my father and without his gods? But idolatry doesn't begin here in my mind. In fact, idolatry in one form begins even before the account of this story. You see, Rachel had a problem having children. And most of you are familiar with the story of Jacob having to marry Leah, the oldest daughter, before he marries Rachel. And Laban practices some deception and he marries her, and then they finagled some more, and then he has to work 14 years before he can marry Rachel. And one of the problems that occurred in that relationship was that Leah was just, she was, talk about fertility, she was having children left and right, and Rachel is not able to conceive. And you wonder, as time goes on, is she, even though she was his favorite, is she beginning to have doubts about her place in that relationship? She's beginning to wonder whether she's going to have the influence and have the relationship with him that she had always had or hoped for. But here is Leah having these children, and here she is without a child. And there's this occasion earlier on, before the idols are stolen, that all this is going on, that she says to Jacob, as Leah's having these babies, "Give me children or I'll die." In her frustration and her anger and her felt need, she throws this on Jacob, to which Jacob says to her, "Am I God? Do I have that kind of control or power or influence?" Obviously, he would have a role in her having a baby, understand. But ultimately, it would be because of God's gift and what he had given. Ironically, when she dies later on in life, she names that last child, "Child of my sorrow." But Jacob named that child Benjamin. But in between, she does have a child, and it's a gift from God. And that first child that she does have, by God's grace and by his goodness, is a child by the name of, can anybody tell me? Joseph. And you know what Joseph means. If you had a name back in this day, it meant something. It said something about you. It said something about the child. It said something about your heart. It said something about your family. And so finally, a child comes, and she names Joseph, "May he add." basically the name of the first child that she has. Jacob has other children by a handmaid. The name of that first child is, I want more. Give me more. Give me a child, she says to him before she begins to be able to have children herself. Give me a child or I die. And ironically, it's in childbirth that she does die. And so that brings me to ask you this question. How would you answer this question? Give me blank. Give me this. I want this. This is something I want so bad. You know, we use the expression to die for. And we use that term for all kinds of things. I don't know if it's used as much today as it used to be used several years ago. And we just make the statement, to die for. Oh, that's to die for. That restaurant, the food there, man, that's to die for. But can we want something so bad that we feel like if I have this, if I get this, even if it's not a bad thing, then I'll be happy. I'll be secure. I'll be contented. I'll be safe. Is there anything that you're desiring right now that in the core of your being would help you to lay down your head on the pillow at night and feel secure and happy and content? If it's anything other than God Himself, it functions as a God. Jesus, when talking about people seeking physical things in life and wanting clothes and protection and all those things that we need, in that context, Jesus talks about not serving two masters. In that same context, Jesus says this in Matthew 6:33, seek ye first and foremost, the kingdom of God, the rule of God, the place of God in your life. And then when you do that, when that is first, all these things shall be given to you. Not everything that you could ever want, but everything that you ever need. The things that make the most difference. The things that we know He would want us to have. So when we seek to place our lives upon His reign, His rule, His will only, the demands of those gods, the demands of those idols, they begin to lose their place. But once again, let's get back and remind ourselves of this idea that it's not just wanting things that are necessarily in and of themselves sinful. It can be good things. There's nothing wrong with wanting a child. There's nothing wrong with longing to have children. And yet, there are some things we can want so bad or place them first in our lives in such a way that they rule us. Tim Keller, in his book, The Reasons for God, he goes through a number of things that he asks the question, what is the center, what is the core of your life? Where do you find your identity? If it's found primarily in your spouse or a significant other, then chances are you can become dependent upon them or codependent upon each other, jealous or controlling. There are other ways that this could affect you. You're so wrapped up in the life of another person, as important as that may be, that when they have trouble or difficulties, you're totally overwhelmed. What about your children? What if your identity, the core of your being, your existence, is all about the kids? Not saying you shouldn't love your kids. But if your primary identity and the core of who you are at the center is your children, you run the danger of trying to live through them or manipulate them, or when they get older, to resent you, to not have a real identity of their own. The opposite of that may be that they may be such a center of your life that you express that by coddling them and pleasing them and placating them when you shouldn't do that. Maybe when they need loving discipline. But because you need them so much or want their love so much that you do that, in essence, it can become a god. Your career and work, if that's the core, the center of your life, then very likely you'll become a workaholic. Your self-esteem, everything you do is wrapped up in your job. And when that happens, it's very possible that that could affect the relationship you have with your family. At worst, you might lose your family and friends. And if your career goes poorly, you're thrown for a loop and it just destroys you. Money and possessions. You'll be eaten up by worry and jealousy about money and things and be tempted to do unethical things to get the things that you want or feel you need. What about pleasure or gratification or comfort? If that is your god, you're likely to become addicted to something, chained to something as an escape strategy to find fulfillment in life. And that might be food or drink or drugs or sex, entertainment, whatever it might be. So that when the tough times in life come, and they will, you want to lean upon these things to give you pleasure or satisfaction. What about the acceptance and the approval of others? If the most important thing in your life is the acceptance and approval of others, to be liked by others, when you're criticized or somebody says something about you, you're going to be overly upset, you're going to be overly hurt. And ironically, if the main thing you're seeking in your life is the acceptance of others, it's going to hurt your relationships. Ultimately, they're not going to be deep, they're not going to be honest. When you need to speak honestly, you're not going to, because you don't want to, you know, hurt the other person's feelings. What about a noble cause or politics? Sometimes even a good cause, and I think of the world of politics and good causes, and I even think about how that applies to how people have responded to COVID-19. In a lot of ways, it's divided people, it's divided the country, it's divided people in the church. Everybody has a belief, they have a cause. But if that is so, so important to you, it's so easy to demonize others and put everybody into a camp of good or bad and to shut them out. And in that case, your enemies, however you perceive your enemies, they control you. It can even happen with religion and rule keeping. Rule keeping, God doesn't call us primarily to Him. I mean, He has rules, He has laws. We've talked about the Ten Commandments, we've talked about God's law to not have any other gods above Himself. But if your religion is primarily, if it's just religion or rule keeping that you are seeking or you hold up, when you don't live up to those standards, whatever those standards might be, you're going to be crushed and utterly devastated. And if you do, you think you do, it's going to make you arrogant and self-righteous and shut people out. You see how these things work. Your health, happiness, beware. Beware. I want to be a good preacher. I want to do well as a preacher. But if that in itself becomes my primary goal versus wanting to please God and be called by God and to be used by God, then that can become an idol and make, if we're doing that with anything, it can make us miserable. Elise Fitzpatrick, in her book, and I referred to it in the bulletin, knew a woman whose husband was a Christian, but he wasn't active. He wasn't involved. He was very much on the fringes in the church, and she wanted him to be more of a spiritual person, a leader in the home, have devotions with the children, pray with the children, and he just refused, and she wanted that so bad, and she shared it with Elise. Elise spoke to her husband and encouraged him to make friends with others in the congregation that could help him, but she was, this woman was so obsessed with him becoming that way that there were times that she would do everything she could to make him happy and placate him and be extra special and extra nice to him, hoping that he would come around and be more of an active Christian in the home. There were other times that she would get angry or frustrated. She would blurt out and be angry, and she would hold herself back, and it just didn't work. Eventually, Elise says that this woman left her husband, and as far as she knows now, is totally disconnected from the church. That it's very possible that to this woman, this desire to have this kind of spouse functioned as a god in her life. What is it that we could possibly say we love or worship or need or desire more than God? Because it's when we seek those things, it's so easy to sin, to obtain them, to manipulate others, to cut corners. And when we don't get them, it's easy to become angry and resentful and hold a grudge or get revenge or give up. But it all goes back to the motives of the heart, doesn't it? I want to close this morning by mentioning another woman who was also unable to have children. Her name was Hannah, and she also had to deal with another wife. That was common back in these days. I don't recommend it to anybody, all right? But Penina, her rival, so to speak, having children all over the place, and I'm sure as she saw her husband Elkanah hugging those children and playing with those children and doing things with those children, it broke her heart. In fact, it tells us she was so distraught that at times she couldn't eat. So one time they make that trek to Shiloh to worship God and make their offerings, and she pours out her heart to God. And we read about that in the book of 1 Samuel, where they go, and she says this: in the bitterness of her soul, Hannah wept much and prayed to the Lord. And she made a vow, saying, "O Lord Almighty, if you will only look upon your servant's misery and remember me and not forget your servant, but give her a son, then I will give him to the Lord for all the days of his life." She wanted a child too. She wanted a son. She pours her heart out to God. Silently, there before a priest who accuses her of being drunk. So she's dealing with this burden and makes this request. But I see a difference in the way that Rachel and Hannah approach this thing. Do you? I see God's grace shaping Hannah's desires to such an extent, as much as she had this need, her desire for this child was not her God. And it wasn't just to end Penina's cruelty. In fact, when she prays, she says, God, if you grant me this gift that I want so much, this child is yours. This child is yours. And so Samuel is born, and he has the name that means gift from God. Her first child's name is gift from God. She kept her promise too. It was ultimately about God. It was about the heart of God, the will of God. She wanted a child. So one child is named gift of God, and one child is basically named I want more. Beware of the idols of your heart. Search your heart. Search my heart. I need to search my heart. What are we doing with the household gods, if anything? The story that we read about in Genesis in chapter 35, as they're traveling, Jacob becomes a changed man. He grows, he changes, and there's a point he says, okay, everybody, the household gods, let's take them all, we're going to take them all, and we're going to bury them. And they buried them there underneath the tree at Shechem. And I'd like to think that Rachel was all in with that. And that she, along with other members of the household, took those idols that couldn't provide what ultimately they needed and buried them under that tree. But don't forget this. There is a tree that we can bury our idols under. And that's a tree, the cross, that Jesus hung on. And he died for us and was raised for us so that we could be set free and bury our idols. We want you to know and remind you, if there's any way we can ever help you individually, to study, to talk, if you have more questions, if you're online, if you're here this morning, we want to be here for you, whether it's the decision to commit your life to Jesus and be baptized or whatever else it might be. But may God help us. And next week I'll get into more some practical things that relate to priorities and time as we talk about these idols. But in the meantime, give those idols to God, so that he can bury him.
Church, why don't you stand with me as we sing this song?